You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Carlin, 98.7 ESPN, New York. Last week, a story flew a little bit under the radar. There were changes on the federal level when it comes to Title IX and reporting of sexual assault and sexual harassment on campuses. Paula Levine is an investigative reporter for ESPN. She does an amazing job on this stuff. She literally wrote the book on the Baylor scandal a few years ago, and she joins us now. Paula, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Well, Paula, last week you wrote a story about Title IX and about how things had changed in regards with Betsy DeVos and some rules that had changed on a federal regulation level. Exactly what happened last week?
Well, the changes that a lot of people were anticipating for some time finally came through, and they will indeed change the process that colleges and universities use to handle sexual harassment, sexual assault complaints starting in August. There are a lot of changes across the board. There are some that are more specific to athletics than others, but the overall goal was to bolster what many people have been asking for, which is more due process. And that is primarily coming from the students who've been accused of sexual assault, sexual harassment, and the people who represent them. And that has drawn some of the changes that were put into place, including the right to be able to cross-examine parties in a case, or aspects that victim advocates and survivors have really said are going to create a chilling effect on people coming forward. But I can get into some of the other specifics. There are some rules pertaining to coaches before, and this is probably the biggest thing that applies to sort of athletic specific, but before, pretty much everyone in any position of authority was considered a mandatory reporter, meaning if this person found out or was told directly about a case of a rape or domestic violence or something along those lines, that they would be required to report it to the Title IX office. And that would have included coaches. And that's a big deal, because in a lot of the bigger scandals that we've seen with athletics and sexual assault, and I can think of a couple examples with Baylor in particular, there were cases of women who had gone to assistant coaches or coaches and told them about, you know, what had happened. And there were failures to relay that information on to the proper people. And those breakdowns ended up in lawsuits. So now that coaches are no longer considered mandatory reporters, had that rule been in place back then and had universities adopted that as their policy, you'd probably see things pretty different today. Not as much accountability on making sure that these cases got reported to the right people and were taken care of appropriately.
Well, let's start there, because to the outsider, that feels like just a protection from lawsuits, that, you know, those key pieces that took place where coaches didn't report and they were major pieces of evidence in lawsuits, that just feels like it's protecting universities from these potential lawsuits. Is that an unfair characterization or a fair one?
That's not an unfair characterization at all. I mean, that's, you know, Chris, that was one of the things that in a lot of the analysis I've seen of these changes has been mentioned as this is, you know, giving colleges and universities less exposure. So I think that is a fair criticism. You know, one of the things, though, that if you read through the 2,000-page announcement of these regulations, that the Department of Education tries to justify that change by saying that it came from, and this is kind of interesting because it doesn't really pertain too much to athletics, but that it came from comments that they had received from professors and other faculty that were saying, you know, I had a student come to me and say, you know, I have this close relationship with the student. The student came to me and said, you know, I want to talk about something that happened to me. Can you promise not to tell anyone? And the professor, you know, said, no, I can't promise not to tell anyone because I'm obligated to pass this along. And And, you know, these professors were saying that they felt like they were, you know, between a rock and a hard place. Now, you know, I think anyone can sort of see that dilemma. Although I will say, athletics or not, one of the things that you've seen at some of these schools is Title IX officers and others have come across cases of serial rapists, serial abusers, by hearing from professors and others of independently of reports of, you know, women who don't know that this is happening to other people. And had all of those kept confidential, you know, you never would have found some of these cases of these abusers who were, you know, really needed to be taken care of and needed to be addressed. The one thing that I would say that with coaches that makes it a little bit different than the professor example, whether or not you believe, you know, that that should be the case, coaches have a higher level of authority. They have more control. I think they're in a different spot than an English professor in this scenario. And I think you could make the argument that their reporting abilities should maybe be looked at, and obligation should be looked at a little bit differently than this professor-student scenario that, you know, if you believe what's put out there, it is what motivated this change.
Paula Levine, ESPN investigative reporter, with us talking about changes that were made on a federal level last week when it comes to protections regarding sexual assault and who reports and who doesn't have to report. And Paula, with all that in mind, it's hard to imagine a coach going into a recruit's home and selling a parent on, I'm an extension of you. When you send your son or daughter to play for me, I am going to become their next level of parent, when that sort of responsibility is not put on them. I'm wondering, does that just kind of help have that sort of stuff fall on empty ears at this point? Does that make those kind of words less important when a parent hears them?
Well, I think one thing that we'll have to see. And the reason I say that is that, you know, there are Title IX experts who say that schools will continue to have them be mandatory reporters. So one thing that's important is that as far as the feds are concerned, in a lot of areas, these are minimum regulations. And schools can, if they want to, they don't have to. Previously, there was the implication that they had to. Schools can keep coaches, or if they aren't already, can make them, officially mandatory reporters. And there are some Title IX folks who think that might continue simply because there are other obligations to the NCAA, to U.S. Safe Sport, for, you know, Olympic sport coaches to have that same level of reporting. So in that case, in your case with the recruit, I mean, that I hadn't thought of it that way, but you know, that might be something, if we're talking about if it's the athlete herself or himself who, you know, may, you know, hopefully not become someone who would have to make a report like this, you know, it's possibly something that they could say, look, you know, our college is, you know, taking a step in what we believe is the right direction. You know, our coaches are still going to be required to report these incidents. And, you know, perhaps that could be something, you know, as you say, that could be beneficial to a recruiter or recruit's parents to know if indeed the school goes that direction.
All right, Paula, were there an inordinate amount of false accusations that had come up in the last couple of years that some felt made it necessary to prompt these changes?
That is an issue of great debate. People who have studied false accusations, whether they're on a Title IX or a criminal scale, have said that the percentages are incredibly low. There are a lot of different studies out there. Some of them are, you know, as low as 2% or less. I think some others, I've not seen anything go anywhere even close to 10%. I think that would be pretty extraordinary. So it is not that there is a rampant, string of false accusations. I think what you're seeing more that prompted this isn't so much that people do trot that out, and I haven't seen it that really gain a lot of traction. But what I have seen is a lot of the accused students and their representatives saying, look, you know, we didn't get a fair shot. We weren't allowed to counter some of these things that were said about our clients or said about our child, and we don't feel like we had due process. That's why some of these things were put into place, specifically, being required to hold these hearings, allowing the cross-examination, providing for, other, I guess, very in-the-weeds procedural aspects that, they believe will balance the scales between the complainant, which is the person who, reports the alleged abuse, and the respondent.
Okay, so now, Paula, the other aspect of that is that, am I correct in saying it's up to the university to determine what level of proof is needed at this point as well, where before that was kind of set to be a preponderance of the evidence?
Yeah, absolutely. Universities now have a choice between deciding whether or not they want to use the preponderance of the evidence scale, or if they want to use the clear and convincing standard. Preponderance of the evidence is what was generally accepted before what was required. With that, another way people put that is defined as 51% of the evidence favoring a finding of fault, sort of a half and half. If it's at least, if we think that there's at least a 50% or chance of more that this is true, that's the threshold. Now they're allowed to use the clear and convincing standard. That's sort of roughly also phrased as sort of like the 75% standard, if preponderance of evidence is the 51%. Still under what they have to use for a criminal conviction, which is beyond a reasonable doubt. So it's higher, but it's not yet to the level of, they can't require a level of, what you would require in a criminal case. And, schools are allowed to choose those now. And some of them have said they will stick with preponderance of the evidence, but I think you will find a number of them going up to the next level and requiring a higher level of proof.
More with ESPN investigative reporter Paula Levine when we come back. It's Carlin, 98.7 ESPN New York.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Back on 98.7 ESPN New York, Carlin visiting with Paula Levine, ESPN investigative reporter, as we discuss the changes that took place last week with regulations on a federal level regarding Title IX, sexual assault, and sexual harassment reporting. All right, one more aspect of it before I get to just a philosophical question or two about it, and that is that it's also limited to on-campus incidents and basically sorority house or school-related off-campus incidents or locations, so that something that happens in an off-campus apartment no longer involves the university as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, Chris, I'm so glad you brought that up, because that is, when I talk to people about this in general, whether you're talking about athletes or non-athletes, like, I feel personally that is probably one of the biggest changes. And it hasn't received as much attention as I think it should. Yeah, I mean, the cases that we've seen in off-campus apartments, at parties that are at a location that are not on campus or controlled by the university, where we see so many of these, they just wouldn't qualify anymore. And that when I look back and I think about the athlete cases that really move the needle on awareness and on Title IX and on this issue in general, so many of them would never really even see the light of day in this context, because that's where they happened. I mean, so now you're limited to the dorms and the residence halls. And don't get me wrong, I mean, there are a lot of cases there, fraternities and sororities, some other, like, these sort of the student housing that's still somewhat, maybe not officially on campus, but still controlled by the university. You will lose out on a lot of those cases. You'll lose out on all those cases that happen outside those boundaries. And I feel like that's going to be a much bigger issue than some of these others.
Now, Paula, who's behind really pushing for these changes? You talked about them being highly expected that they were going to happen. But who is really pushing it? Is it the universities that are pushing it the most?
I think there were some. I think there was some push by universities, especially those who felt like they were getting sued from both sides, and many of them were. They were getting sued from the people who were making the complaints as well as from the accused. They wanted more clear guidelines, but I really the real push came from the accused students who had been expelled, students who had been disciplined. A number of those were athletes. They had filed lawsuits against the schools. Some of them, prevailed with pretty substantial settlements. I know of one university where there was for one particular case, the university had to pay out a settlement to the former athlete as well as to the complainant because of errors that they made in the case. So, I do think the most vocal, push for this came from the attorneys and from the organizations that were behind the accused rights, the due process groups. And they had, as soon as she came into that position, they had an ally in Education Secretary Betsy DeVos. I mean, she had ties to some of these organizations even previously. So I think that's as soon as she came into office, in fact, that was one of the things she said she wanted to do was improve due process. And everybody kind of realized that that meant that, there were going to be changes that were going to be more favorable to the students facing the accusations.
Paula, I guess what's troubling the most to me about it is we've had these incredibly high profile cases. You literally wrote the book about what happened at Baylor a few years ago. We've had what happened at Michigan State. We've had what happened at Ohio State. And they're all different instances, don't get me wrong. But it started to feel like maybe it was headed in the right direction in protecting the victims above all else. And now it feels like a step backward. So am I reading it wrong from that perspective?
No, I mean, I think that's a fair read and a fair interpretation. I mean, that was one of the things, in the book that I wrote with my colleague, Mark Schlebaugh about Baylor, the violated book. I mean, one of the things that we put in there is, there was a hope that case, that this story, that this university was going to, sort of be not the end of it, but at least be like, look, you've got to stop doing this. This is worst case scenario. This is what can happen. And it wasn't. I mean, we saw a number of schools after that, Michigan State, which I've done a ton of reporting on, still continue to have these issues. And you're right. I mean, to a certain degree, it does feel like there's almost I don't know if it's going backwards or if there's burnout. One thing I've talked to a number of people about is, we talk about the Me Too movement and we talk about all these changes in entertainment and politics and so forth. And there does almost seem to be a consensus that the Me Too movement sort of left sports behind. I mean, there are a lot of people who would say that athletes and schools and teams and so forth seem to have been almost immune to the wholesale changes that the Me Too movement was supposed to bring about. And, that says something about the power of these institutions and the power of the fan base. It is kind of depressing.
Well, the last part of it, Paula, and it's the biggest really point of all to the whole thing. Does this now really make it more difficult in the mind of a victim to come forward? I mean, not even so much, technically speaking, but also just from a why bother standpoint, that it's going to be more of a headache than anything else for the victim as opposed for the accused.
Yeah, that's one thing that I think all of all all of the feedback I've seen from the victim advocacy groups and survivors is that this will make it more difficult for people to come forward. And you're right, not just in a technical sense, but in a, yeah, in a why bother. I mean, if it was this difficult before, you know, clearly, I mean, I think there's a feeling that the deck is stacked against them, that they weren't being believed. And now I think there's a feeling that, you know, this means that, you know, it's going to be even harder for them. So why even put forth, you know, this information? Going back to the mandatory reporting thing, one of the things that I think came out of the regulations is that, you know, at a bare minimum, you know, make sure that the students are educated on, you know, the resources that they have, and schools haven't done a very good job about that. They give these, I've heard this so many times about, you know, speaking to women who feel like, you know, why even bother? I mean, they get these pamphlets with this very legal language about what they can do and what their rights are. And it's, you know, it's written by attorneys. It's not written for college students. And they see this and they're like, my gosh, this seems so daunting. Like, why even go forward? I think, you know, with some of these changes, at least from, you know, from what we've heard from the survivor community, that deterrence is going to be even greater.
Paula, I appreciate the insight very much. And, you know, I read your story about this last week and it's incredibly bothersome. And I think, you know, you're one of the journalists that's kind of been out in front on this stuff over the last, 7-8 years. But what's even more bothersome is that the last week or two, this hasn't really gotten a ton of attention, because it is such a big deal. And I think in the midst of everything that's going on, it's unfortunately getting buried a little bit. So I really appreciate your time, and I certainly appreciate the reporting you do on it. Thanks again.
Yeah, thank you for bringing attention to it.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.